From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, with hurricanes growing in size and strength, can a massive seawall protect the Texas coast? Asia's demand for Texas turtle meat is going to have to go unfulfilled, and how a town in Texas is going to be the capital of Bitcoin. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Many are recognizing that something needs to be done about the threat to Texas from more super hurricanes. And one discussed defense against the massive destructive storm surge is a mega project called the Texas Spine. It's an ambitious proposal to build a nearly 60-mile system of seawalls, dikes, earthen barriers, floating gates, and steel levees along the Texas coast. The Texas Spine would protect the oceanfront properties, homes, businesses, wetlands, but the priority of the shield is to keep water out of the petroleum industry. This is home to the world's largest concentration of petrochemical facilities. 30 Texas refineries represent a third of the nation's refining capacity. Texas is seeking at least $12 billion for the full coastal spine, coming from public funds. Last month, the federal government approved the initial almost $4 billion for three separate projects to protect oil facilities. Lynn Waterworth is an executive professor with Texas A&M University Galveston in the Department of Maritime Administration.
In 2008, we were hit by Ike, caused about $30 billion worth of damage, and then the concept of the Ike Dike was developed by Dr. Merrill here at Texas A&M Galveston. And if you've lived in the area, we know that we're susceptible to hurricanes. Last year, 2017, we had three Category 4 hurricanes that came into the Gulf. But we've been very fortunate since Ike to not have a hit of a hurricane. Other than last year, we had Harvey that came in, caused the largest rain event in American history. But hurricane hitting a metropolitan area like Houston, Galveston area would be a traumatic event for the entire nation. So there's been an idea of building a coastal spine along the area that would protect Galveston Bay, Galveston, City of Houston, and the petrochemical industry and the busiest port in the United States. So if you had a hurricane come up the ship channel, you could end up having 27, 30 foot of surge all the way up in Liberty and Chambers County. So it's one of those things that we have a risk from hurricanes, and we have a growing population. We have growing industry. We're having a growing port. And the idea of investing money to protect those kind of assets, which is really a national asset, is the idea. So right now we've got the Corps of Engineers doing a study along the Texas coastline. They are going to have a report that has come, will probably be out in the October-November timeframe with public meetings. And I believe they're going to propose a tentatively selected plan of a coastal spine.
There's also talk of putting these types of a sea shield or barrier up in the Port Arthur area.
Absolutely. They're, in fact, the Corps has come out with two plans, and they've allocated over $3 billion to build, I think it's close to 27 miles of levee system in the Port Arthur area, because that, too, is one of the, if you look at the six northern counties from Sabine to Freeport, the amount of petrochemical manufacturing that goes on there is phenomenal. What I call the bookends, not the Galveston Bay complex, but Sabine and Freeport. They had studies already in works, and now they have money allocated to them to start projects to do surge protection to protect those national assets. So we've got the two bookends done. Now we've got to figure out how to do the larger of the projects, which is protecting the, 6.5 million people in the industry here in the Galveston Bay area.
Does there need to be a conversation about how we're going to pay for this?
Yes. What you have is that the project, we haven't gone through value engineering. We're still in the core process. and any large infrastructure projects, civil works projects, will go through the Corps of Engineers, but we'll have the opportunity to make comments on what kind of cost it is, how to save money, how other funding from the state could possibly come into the project to make it faster or more advantageous. But right now, it's those discussions haven't developed. Right now, we're on the path of a federal project cost shared by a cost sharing entity out of the state. Right now, it's identified as GLO. The core report won't be complete until about April of 2021. And that, if it's approved, it will become authorized at that point. And then we start working on appropriations from the federal government and the cost-sharing sponsor to bring monies to the table.
But with your perspective and at the Texas A&M Galveston, are you just looking at the engineering part of it, or are you trying to figure out those issues of how do we pay for it and how do we talk about this in public? How do we discuss things like sea level rise and other things?
Yeah, with the sea level rise is already in our analysis of what the project potentially looks like. But as an academic, we're trying to seek out all forms of information like sea level rise is a concern, or the impact of biomass and the impact of a gauge structure on Galveston Bay, or what does it do for the insurance rates for the community behind it? What kind of economic developments can you have? We're looking at all those types of things. We're not as engaged with the funding of the project, but we're very aware and we try to talk about the risk of leaving this kind of manufacturing, this many people, the impacts to the environment if we did get hit by a hurricane. And I think that was driven last year with Harvey, because a lot of folks may not remember, but Harvey went from a tropical storm, and 36 hours later, it was a Category 4 storm. And if I'm not mistaken, the last evacuation plans that I've heard for our area take 72 hours. So the question is, there's a significant amount of risk. How do we mitigate that risk? And if we have alternatives or a coastal spine in place, what are the impacts of the coastal spine to environment, people, those kind of things? So we'll continue to press that research to help the Corps come up with the very best answer at the least possible cost. So,
to get the public buy-in to move this project faster, there has to be, I think, some sort of acceptance of a responsibility by the petrochemical industry that they're going to pay their fair share. I mean, what do you think about that?
What's been very interesting, industry has come online realizing that they can't run their facilities without people. And people that live in communities are going to have schools, water treatment, wastewater treatment. So industries online are coming in saying that we want to help. We want to help develop this. We want to help protect our employees. So, they're willing to participate. But the question is, everybody's right now sort of waiting for the Corps to come out with their report.
Lynn Waterworth is a retired colonel in the Army Corps of Engineers. He's an executive professor with the Texas A&M University Galveston in the Department of Maritime Administration. For more on the proposed Texas spine, Brant Manchin joins us. He's with the Texas chapter of the Sierra Club.
The Sierra Club has been attempting to make its voice heard, not very successfully, unfortunately, because of our concerns about both the environmental impacts that will occur, but also we want to keep people out of harm's way and work with and not against nature. And the Ike Dyke doesn't appear to do either one of those things. So we have our own alternative that we have put together called the Double E, the Economically and Environmentally Sound Storm Surge Alternative for Galveston Bay. And we've been submitting that to various agencies who are going to look at the Corps of Engineers proposal and on our website and that sort of thing. So we've been trying to inform people that there are alternatives.
We're talking, I've heard numbers 12 to 20, even more, billion dollars on the table for
It's very interesting. When the proposal first came out back in 2008, 2009, it was like, oh, it's only going to cost $1 to $2 billion. And then it was like 3 to 4, then it was 6, then it was 10, and now it's somewhere between 12 and 15, and, you know, we don't know what the cost is actually going to be, because we haven't had a really good cost estimate yet, and we're hoping to get some more of that information when the Corps comes out with its feasibility study and environmental impact statement at the end of September, so the public knows how much money that they're expected to pay for the coastal swine.
There seems to be sort of a glib reaction to this by some, but they say here's an example of big oil asking the government to pay for a project to protect refineries and other oil industry facilities from climate change, sea level rise, and which neither of them want to admit exist.
That is true. That's what the Sierra Club has been saying for a while. We all agree that we have a very large petrochemical industry in the Houston area, and that we don't want to see spills or releases during hurricanes. We all agree on that. But the industry itself has been amazingly silent about what it thinks should be done, as well as how much it should pay. It's one thing to say, yes, you provide jobs, right? And so we want to help you with storm surge. But it's another thing to basically say, hey, it's all in your pocket. We get the benefits. You pay the bill. It's sort of like, you know, it's your money and our storm surge dike. So we think the industry needs to man up, to pony up, and be honest about what it's willing to pay for a coastal spine. And right now what they basically said is, we're not willing to pay anything. Thank you, Senator Cornyn and Cruz. Please go ahead and get the money and build this thing.
And Land Commissioner George P. Bush.
Yes. I mean, George P. Bush, who's the commissioner of the General Land Office, has been very supportive of this. In fact, the Sierra Club met with his representatives last year to discuss this issue, and, you know, we traded information back and forth. Commissioner Bush still supports this. As far as I know, he's not seen the Sierra Club alternative, even though we've provided it. And there's never been a public discussion, really. I mean, there have been some public meetings, but really, if you're going to spend $10 to $20 billion, or, you know, however much it's going to cost, you really need to sit down in all the communities and have real detailed discussions about, are y'all willing to pay for this? Do you understand how this will impact your life? Because it's going to impact people's lives that live there. For instance, if you live in Shore Acres, and there's a levee built in front of you, a lot of people don't like that. If there's a levee built behind you, people don't like that. And there's still going to be storm surge in Galveston Bay, and most people don't understand that, the coastal spine doesn't stop all storm surge. There will still be a significant storm surge in Galveston Bay, and that is the result of modeling done by researchers at the University of Texas, Clint Dawson and others, who have said, you know, in the best possible scenario, coastal spine Ike Dike will prevent 50% of the storm surge. So that means if we have a 30-foot storm surge, we still have 15-foot storm surge in the bay. That's called residual storm surge. So, and then there's the ebb tide. Oh, my goodness. The ebb tide is like, oh, that water's pushed up into the upper part of the bay. Well, what happens when the hurricane leaves and all that water flushes back out? You've got a big levee in front of that system. So there's going to be impacts that people don't understand, and they need to be told those impacts so that they can think about them and weigh them and then give their input. And in part, the Corps of Engineers study that's coming out at the end of September will give people that opportunity. But there hasn't been a good community dialogue going yet on this.
What about the issue that climate change is real, sea level rise is real, it's happening now, This is because of humanity pumping carbon into the atmosphere. This is all right. Science. This is locked in. It's real. It's not a hoax. This is not biased or whatever. This is just the way it is. To build a project like this in order to protect the petrochemical industry continues to allow the creation of worsening climate change without addressing what's going on.
Yeah, and remember too, David, that this project does not stop sea level rise. Sea level rise goes on. And and climate change will continue. And that is factual. All of the scientists around the world have worked really hard on this for decades. And this is their best estimates. And not only that, but if you read your media, either on the internet or whatever, you see that the estimates keep increasing about sea level rise. In fact, recently there were some articles about Antarctica and Greenland, how the ice sheets are melting faster underneath the water, where it's harder to see than they ever, could postulate. And so we've gone from, by the end of this century, having a 2-level sea level rise to 4 feet to 6 feet. Now some people are saying 8 to 10 feet we may have by the end of this century. Those estimates keep increasing, not decreasing. So the science is all on higher sea level rise, and the cost for that is burning fossil fuels. And so the more we can turn the ship and do wind power, Texas number one in wind power. Well, we need to do a whole lot more of that. And so, but we're not turning the ship fast enough. And now we have the fossil fuel industry basically saying, protect us so we can continue to create the conditions so we'll have sea level rise. And that doesn't make a lot of sense.
How do you propose that the oil companies pay their fair share on this?
The Sierra Club would certainly like to see the oil companies do several things. One is the oil companies need to do a better job of reducing their fossil fuel emissions. Another thing is they need to come out and say, it only seems fair that they pay, somewhere at least 50% of the cost.
Brant Manchin is with the Environmental Law Program of the Texas branch of the Sierra Club. We've been talking about the Texas Spine, a multi-billion-dollar project that would protect parts of the Texas coast from hurricane storm surge. There are 28 different types of freshwater turtles found in Texas, and this week all of them were made off limits to professional turtle hunters who were collecting the critters for commercial harvest. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission found that this was an unsustainable practice, and it put the Texas turtle population at risk. Jenny Loda is an attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity.
We're very excited about this decision. Essentially, it protects all species of freshwater turtles in Texas from being collected commercially. So the state had allowed collection of 4 different species of freshwater turtles throughout the state, and now it's decided to get rid of the allowance for that collection altogether because it's just not sustainable and it's harming the turtle populations, and then subsequent, as a result of that, harming the ecosystems.
So what was the turtle situation?
So the situation historically is there'd been a lot of commercial collection of turtles throughout Texas and the region. And back in 2007, Texas actually, in response to a petition from ourselves back then and some other groups, they had decided to do some restrictions to turtle collection and basically to protect quite a few species, but they continue to allow collection of these 4 species, as well as restricting their collection to simply private lands and waters. But that still covered the vast majority of the state, so the collection has still been allowed to go on. It's definitely reduced the numbers of turtles taken in recent years, but since research has shown that it's really just not sustainable to collect them at all, they decided to go forward and just ban commercial collection altogether.
Okay. Who is collecting these turtles?
So these are commercial trappers that are collecting them, and then mostly they're likely being shipped out to other countries. Asia is one of the places where most turtles that are collected throughout the U.S. end up being sent. And one of the things that should be revealing here is the fact that part of the reason they're importing so many turtles there is because most of the wild turtles in Asia have been wiped out through collection and in order for the food markets. And so in recent years, it's really turned to imports from the U.S., and so now it's really been wiping out a lot of turtle populations.
We have commercial turtle hunters who have been operating in Texas.
Right.
These guys show up and will hunt them and fly them off to Asia?
Yes, essentially. In Texas, up until this new rule today, there has been this restriction, where they couldn't be trapped on public lands and waters since the 2007 change. On any private lands, essentially. And
there were people who wanted turtle meat, is that it?
Essentially, that's generally what it's being used for. And I'm sure some of it is sold probably at markets within Texas. I live in California, and we do have turtles sold in markets here and in live food markets. And I have seen from some permits from work we've done here that some of those turtles actually have come from Texas. So some are possibly going to other states. Some are likely being exported to Asia.
What is the state of the turtle population right now in Texas?
Well, turtles in general are not doing great. They have lots of different threats that they have to deal with, and so this collection is just one more thing.
If you're on your own personal property and you have a turtle, there's turtles in your pond or whatever, and you catch them and do something to them, do you need to worry about getting in trouble with the law?
I believe there is some personal collection still allowed. And, if in that instance, there definitely wouldn't be allowance for sale of that turtle. So that's a big part of this is it's the commercial collection that's being changed here. Any rules that Texas has in place regarding personal collection, whether it's for pets or for or possibly, collecting to eat yourself, those are under totally separate rules from this and aren't changed by today's decision.
Jenny Loda is an attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity. She tells us that commercial turtle harvesting is now illegal in Texas. Bitcoin has seen better days, and so has the town of Rockdale, Texas. And now the future fortunes of the two are intertwined. The world's largest Bitcoin mining facility is setting up server farms in the town with a population of about 5,000. That's located about halfway between Austin and College Station. Kara Clore is the executive director of the Rockdale Municipal Development District.
So Bitmain will be in operation by 2019, and we're very excited to have them. They're looking to employ 400 people, and they're just recently hired their site manager and their HR director, and I think they started today, actually. Here at this location, they've been in training elsewhere.
Bitcoin mining is not like regular mining, right?
Correct.
I mean, what is it?
So Bitcoin mining is, I think people focus on the Bitcoin mining aspect a little too much. It's more about the blockchain technology, which is a ledger. And that ledger is verified by people validating all of these transactions. And as a reward for all of these people validating transactions, that is when they receive a Bitcoin, which they have to solve, these mathematical equations to be able to verify the transactions.
So Bitcoin is a form of virtual currency that's not controlled by any national government. It's decentralized, and it's gone up, it's gone down in value, but it was one of the big breakthrough virtual currencies out there, and it takes a lot of computer power in order to generate new Bitcoins, right?
Correct.
And Rockdale is going to be the center of the Bitcoin universe apparently, in this decentralized world because of why? Why Rockdale?
Well, it takes lots of servers to do this mining, and so with lots of servers comes lots of power that is needed. And Rockdale is the home of the former Alcoa aluminum smelter, which it also takes a massive amount of power to produce. So they will be occupying the former smelter, which already has infrastructure there to pull the needed power to run the servers. So that's the main reason we were chosen. We had what they needed.
Did y'all have to bid on this? Were there any local incentives? How did Rockdale lure this enterprise?
So we did provide incentives. We gave them a tax abatement phase-in. They will be paying for 5 years. They'll receive an 80% tax abatement on the improvements that they're making to the property. And then after 5 years, the sixth year will be 50%, and it will go down in 10% increments for the next 5 years until the 10th year is at 10%.
So you say about 300 to 400 people will be hired to work. What kind of jobs?
The bulk of the employees will be computer technicians that will be servicing the servers, working on the servers.
What's the town think? I mean, do people, are they celebrating? Is it a reversal of fortune for Rockdale?
So the entire community, Rockdale and Milam County, are all ecstatic to have them. You know, of course, when the buzz first started, everybody was, what is a Bitcoin? But after a little bit of education and everybody kind of researching, they're really excited about having them, excited about the new technology and what the future holds for us here.
Do you feel like there's the volatility of Bitcoin? Is that a concern?
No, it's not. Bitmain is a very substantial company, and they don't have all their eggs in one basket. So even when Bitcoin mining, I think it's going to be up in 2040 or 42, depending on what you read, and so their technology will go far surpass that. And so I do not have any fear of that happening.
See, what do you mean?
No, it's projected that the last Bitcoin will be mined in 2040.
Okay, so y'all think y'all have about 20 years of lifespan in your facility. When will the first Bitcoin start being ginned up in Rockdale?
They're currently doing some testing, but they are scheduled to really ramp up at the first of the year.
Kara Clore is the executive director of the Rockdale Municipal Development District. Rockdale will soon be home to the world's largest Bitcoin mining center. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs. And you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.